marriage will take off when a woman hears Song of Songs 6:9 from her husband.
And what is it?
My dove, my perfect one, is the only one. Just think about it. My dove, my perfect one, is the only one. I don't want you to be anyone else. I'm never comparing you to anyone else. I love you for who you are. You are my woman. You define woman to me. And the wife saying the same thing to my husband. You are my man. You define what it is to be a man to me. That's when you really feel cherished.
That's Gary Thomas describing one of the best ways that you can improve the relationship you have with your spouse and strengthen your marriage. Gary is with us today on Focus on the Family, and your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
John, what Gary's talking about is such a powerful word, cherish, which means to hold dear, to feel or show affection, or to care for someone, to nurture them. And in this culture today, I think we have lost the meaning of it, and so often the practice of it. It's not a word we use very often, but we, millions of us who got married, said it during our vows, right? Mm-hmm. I think it was, how does it go? We promise to love and to cherish until death do us part. And we try to love each other. Here, Focus on the Family, we're constantly talking to married couples about how to love each other deeper. But we really have missed this idea of cherishing your mate. And we are going to talk about that today with Gary Thomas. I'm looking forward to it.
And Gary's been on the program a number of times. He's a gifted writer and speaker, at least 20 books and hundreds of magazine articles. He's part of the teaching team at Second Baptist Church in Houston, Texas. And he's here to tell us more about his newest book, which captures that concept you're talking about, Jim. Cherish. The one word that changes everything for your marriage.
Welcome back, Gary.
Thank you.
It's always good to have you here. You're just bubbly and smiling, and it's great to have you at Focus.
Well, it's a highlight for me to be at this place.
Hey, let me ask you, you heard my little intro on cherish, and mm-hmm. It did strike me. We say that word when we do our marriage vows, but I don't know that even Gene and I, if we've ever talked about it since that day. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's your definition of cherish?
I believe cherish is taking our marriages to the next level. You mentioned how all of us, just about all of us, pledge to love and to cherish till death do us part. We always speak about love. And when we think about love, we think about commitment and sacrifice and hanging in there. Cherish raises the bar a little bit higher. And it's interesting because when I was working on this book, I would ask women, how do you feel cherished? What makes you feel cherished? And it's like, turn over the hourglass, get a cup of coffee because you're going to be there for a while. And I would say to guys, what makes you feel cherished? And there'd be, am I supposed to be?
It almost seemed like awkward.
It doesn't sound like a masculine word.
But here's what I found.
Be cherished.
I put it in the language of a car. A lot of guys are into their cars. What does it mean to cherish your car? Well, if you cherish your car, you protect your car. You're not driving down potholes. You're indulging your car. You're giving it the best wax job and the wash job. You think about that car, and when you do, it gives you pleasure. You want to showcase your car. You want others to see, hey, come on outside and see my baby. And it's kind of funny. I don't mean to insult wives, but I'd say, can you treat your wife the same way you treat the favorite car you've ever had, you know, before you had to get the SUV or the minivan? But that that has that direct application. And I think it's so sad that we often think of cherishing things more than cherishing people. But the good thing, I think the good news is that cherishing is a skill that can be learned. It can be practiced. We can choose to cherish. You know, infatuation comes and goes, but cherishing is something that we can build.
Now, you see that cherishing happening even back to the garden.
Yes.
Adam and Eve. Yeah. Refresh my memory. Where did you catch that moment where there was cherishing occurring?
That, I believe, is the goal of a cherishing marriage. You might ask, why were Adam and Eve in paradise? Why were they so happy early on in their marriage? You could say, well, there wasn't any sin, and that's true. I don't think it's just because they were naked and unashamed. Some younger men might think that, but I don't think that was it. Here's what I think was a huge spiritual issue going on. When Adam first saw Eve, there was literally no one to compare her to.
She was in.
There was no Juanita. There was no Shanice. there was no Janet. There was just Eve. She defined what a woman was for Adam, and Adam defined what a man was for Eve. He couldn't say, well, she, Juanita has a better sense of humor, or Shanice is slender or curvier, or has, you know, more intelligence, or is more gracious. She just defined woman for him. And I often tell guys, because this is a time when guys often cherish their wives. It used to be when the bridal march started, everybody would turn around and watch the bride come in. But I've noticed that's changed. And I think the internet memes have sort of changed that. A number of people look up front at the groom's face.
Right.
Is he crying? What's his expression? They want to see that. And I've stood by a number of those men as a pastor when they're watching that bride come down the aisle. And at that moment, she's the only one he sees. There are hundreds of other women in the room, he is just so fixated on her. He's focused. She's the only woman in the world to him. And I said, cherishing is about making that a daily reality, not a once in your lifetime experience, but a daily reality. Marriage will take off when a woman hears Song of Songs 6:9 from her husband.
And what is it?
My dove, my perfect one, is the only one. Just think about it. My dove, my perfect one, is the only one. I don't want you to be anyone else. I'm never comparing you to anyone else. I love you for who you are. You are my woman. You define woman to me. And the wife saying the same thing to my husband. You are my man. You define what it is to be a man to me. That's when you really feel cherished. That's when you really feel accepted. And I think that's what Song of Songs is getting at, that cherishing attitude. 1 Corinthians 13 celebrates love. Song of Songs celebrates cherishing.
Now, some couples, or let's just say some wives, are going, I don't have that. I want that. Maybe some husbands, too, are saying, I wish we had that kind of relationship. How does a couple reset and recalibrate? Because we've not recognized that important ingredient of cherishing one another. How do we change it today? We've been perfunctory. We love each other. We said those words, and we remember that commitment, but we don't cherish each other.
Mm-hmm. There has to be a new mindset, and then there are a number of practices we can put into place. The mindset, I think, is best captured by a statement about the ballet. The Russian-born choreographer George Balanchine once said, "The ballet is woman." And by that, he meant that the best, at least in pas de deux, the couple's dancing, the best male dancers recognize people come to the ballet to see the woman, her agility, her grace, her strength, her beauty. And so his job is to help her be more than she could be on her own. Because he can lift her, turn her, support her, catch her, she can do things that you just can't do on your own. And George Balanchine also said, "My job is to make the beautiful yet more beautiful." And I think if men would adopt that attitude, how do I showcase my wife? How do I hold her up? How do I support her so that people see the beautiful woman that I know is there? And then you help her through that performance. And then I love it at the end. If a male dancer has done his job, he's helped her, he's supported her, she's wowed the crowd, he finally throws her, she lands in the spotlight. It's so powerful, the audience stands up in a thunderous standing ovation. And the male dancer steps back in the shadows. He's breathing hard, but he's done his job. The female dancer is celebrated. She's adored. That's what he was there to do. And so the idea is, how do I take somebody who's probably been beat up in life and ignored and rejected? How do I indulge them with my love and celebrate them so they become really the powerful person God created them to be, celebrated and even recognized by others?
You know, in many ways, Gary, that can sound exhausting. The demand is so high to be able to do that. God, of course, can do that, but I'm not God.
Right.
I'm just somebody's husband and a friend to many. How does that person, see that requirement to cherish in that way and actually begin to meet that expectation?
My marriage changed when God gave me a heart that took pleasure in my wife's pleasure. I think that's the difference.
Was there a moment that occurred?
No. I think it was going through these scriptures. I think it's just praying about my marriage, asking God to come into my marriage. But when I got my highest fulfillment in loving her well and just sensing that, when we talked earlier in a broadcast about a lifelong love, seeing our marriage as worship, that recognizing that that's one of the best ways I could love my Heavenly Father, was treating him as my father-in-law and loving on his daughter. And I think it was sort of a corollary from that when it came down from that, and just being able to realize that that's when I find the most meaning in my marriage. And so it's not it's not a burden. It's not oppressive. It's kind of fun. It's a delight. It's just a change of mindset. And here's the thing. The lust to be appreciated, to be noticed, to be served, to be pleasured is like any other lust. It can't be satisfied. It has to be crucified. If you're still operating with that mindset in marriage, you can't have a spouse that can focus on you that much to satisfy the lust, because you're never noticed enough. You're never appreciated enough. But when you have the attitude of Romans 12:10, outdo one another in showing honor. And so, okay, if I want to be a faithful believer today, I've got to outdo my spouse in showing her honor. Then if your spouse isn't honoring you, okay, this is an easier day. You're running downhill that day, not uphill. If your spouse is really spoiling you and loving on you, think, man, it's going to be hard to obey Scripture today. I've got
to
really
challenge.
Up my game. And it's that sense of fulfillment that comes. And there's just a joy that comes, I think, from aligning your heart with God's.
Hey, we've talked a lot about the relationship and how a man needs to honor and cherish his wife. What does that look like in the other direction? A wife cherishing her husband. What are some of those examples?
Well, when the wife looks at her husband like Adam, the way I describe it is that with the day she gets married, she has a commitment to contentment. No guy has it all. You have to realize that your guy has certain strengths and he doesn't
have. So start with the deficit. That's right. How we begin this.
And you decide that he defines what a successful husband is for me. I'm not going to compare him to Joe. I'm not going to compare him to Frank. I'm not going to compare him to Antoine. And women, I don't think they really realize they're doing it. I was working with a young couple, and he was a champion swimmer in high school. So he got attention from an Ivy League school that had him come to their school because he was willing to swim for them. And he had a girlfriend who now has become his wife, and she was just seeing somebody else that it was an actor or football player or something that was just stacked, and she just remarked about it. And he thought, man, I've got to look like that. And so he starts lifting different kinds of weights and whatnot, but that actually made him less effective as a swimmer. Because if you're a really good swimmer, you're not going to be necessarily a really good linebacker or vice versa. I mean, a linebacker is just going to sink. And so it's a wife blessing her husband with the realization that he can't be everything. And so when she gets married, she's making a commitment. If you're not a handyman, I'm not faulting you for not being a handyman. If you're not,
that makes you feel better.
If you're not the kind of guy that enjoys 2-hour soulful conversations, I'm not going to feel jealous that my girlfriend's husband, first thing he does, comes home and says, how about your day? How are you feeling? Where are things going? That you made a choice and you're trying to build on the strengths of that choice.
You know, Gary, you talked about the ballerina. I think that's a beautiful illustration of a man's role, a woman's role, a husband and a wife. You also use an analogy of second violin. I guess, yeah. Second fiddle might be more commonly said.
Right.
You know, I don't play second fiddle to nobody, yeah. You know, but how does the second fiddle position work?
Yeah.
And what I appreciated about it is that limelight search. Who's going to be the one in the limelight?
It came from a famous conductor who said, I can get any number of first violins. He goes, the most difficult person to find is a second violin.
Not because of their playing ability, but because
willing
of their
attitude.
Willing
to play attitude. That role. To put as much effort and excellence and meticulousness into playing second violin as you do for the first violin. But he says, without the second violin, the orchestra isn't going to sound well. I mean, you've got instruments, they do their part. If everybody's trying to play first violin, it's going to be a disaster. And that's what happens in marriage, is that we always want to be first violin. And people are listening in today and saying, boy, I wish my husband was like that with me as the ballerina. And that's the mindset that we're talking about, that do we believe Jesus or not? He said it's better to give than to receive.
Right.
And it's hard for us to trust that. I'm just saying, when I test that out and trust Jesus, I find that those words are true.
You talk a bit about how you undo those patterns that you've been maybe into for 10 years or 20 years, or in Gene, in my case, it'd be 30 years we've been married.
Yeah.
And I see those things. Sometimes temperament can come into this. I could see, as I read the book and looked at the material, temperament. You know, one of the things for me, when I'm under pressure, my personality type, as I've tested it, I can be a verbal attacker. I mean, I will respond with verbal jabs.
Right.
And I could see how that doesn't play well in cherishing. So I've got to learn how to back that off and think before I speak, right? Rather than saying, man, have you looked at the house today? That would be like a verbal jab.
Right.
Or what's happened today?
Well, see, that's why I like to present Cherish as a new model of marriage. Most wives don't want to know that their husbands are just willing to be committed to them. And most husbands don't want to know that their wives just put up with them. We want to be cherished. A friend of mine was driving with seven other men. And he said, how many of you feel that your wives love you? Every man raised his hand. And he said, how many of you believe that your wives like you? Every hand went down. Those husbands felt loved. They didn't feel cherished. So what you're talking about is exactly where we need to go, Jim, because I do think that needs to be the new model. I don't want my wife just to know that I love her. I want her to feel cherished. And a lot of it comes with this mental determination that I'm going to display cherishing. Let me give a couple examples where I've seen it in action that it's worked really well. I got onto an elevator one time. Another married couple got in, middle-aged, and I'm in the back of the elevator, and he's standing in front of the buttons, just kind of staring at him. So his wife says, floor 9. And you think she's just giving him a physics test. I mean, he can't – I wanted to say it's between 8 and 10, but that would have been mean. So I she just smiled. He finally found it, and she just cuddled up to him. I said, your mind is really full about that business meeting, isn't it? He goes, yeah. She goes, don't worry. It's going to come out. And, you know, she could have shamed him. She could have been sarcastic. But what she did is she recognized he's doing something really important. And so that's distracting him from something that really doesn't matter. And so she chose to look at the best, not to use it as a moment to ridicule him or belittle him. And I think that man walked out of the elevator feeling cherished and supported and encouraged. Here's how another wife did it. It was great. And it was a younger couple. They got married very young and got pregnant almost right away. And they're walking through a mall. She is 8 months pregnant at this time. And this beautiful, live, blonde woman walks by, very athletic. And her husband, Brian, says, man, I forgot how pretty you are when you're not pregnant.
Ooh.
He really said that. And she just broke out crying. And he honestly didn't know why she was crying. He thought he was complimenting her. And here's what was so amazing. When I was talking to her, and this is why they are now happily married 28 years later, she goes, I realized I had to give him the benefit of the doubt. He would never intentionally hurt me. Things got jumbled up in his mind. He was trying to say, you know, you're a beautiful woman. I know things are different now, but I remember that. And she goes, and so I just had to do that mental gymnastics, realizing that's not my husband and giving him the benefit of the doubt. She goes, and we laugh about it today.
Yeah.
Because he honestly was mystified. Why are you crying? I don't know it. And she goes, you know what? It can be really hard for a new bride to do that with her husband. She doesn't understand the way a man thinks. She doesn't understand the way a man feels. And she says, at least give your spouse the benefit of the doubt.
That's a gracious woman, let me tell you.
Definitely.
Gary, why is it so hard for us to give that grace? I mean, it seems like a lot of younger couples, they live there and then time kind of happens and kids happen and we get a little more comparing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think part of it is just our sinful nature, because the reality is a cherishing marriage is so rich, it's worth working for. I think one of the biggest lies is that infatuation is the pinnacle of marriage. And the reason I wrote cherishing is that infatuation neurologically lasts about 12 to 18 months. Unless you have a damaged brain, it can't go longer than that. Cherishing is better. I've been infatuated, and I'm in a marriage where we're growing in cherishing. I'm saying cherishing is better. I don't envy those infatuated couples, because I know the infatuation is going to end, and they're going to have to do the hard work of realizing who they're married to, go through the grace and forgiveness, and get through the bitterness. And the other thing, John, it's just so silly, is contempt makes no sense. I was with a couple one time at a dinner, and he's a very quiet man, and he wasn't participating at all. I was just trying to be nice and bring him into the conversation. And so, knowing what I did, I said, don't chefs usually think such and such? And she immediately cut in. He's not a chef. He's a cook. A chef prepares things. He just heats them up. There's a difference. And it was clear that she was afraid I was going to give her husband a little more respect than he deserved. And she was horrified. Why would anybody respect my husband? And I knew his situation. He worked at a rest home. He had charge of a kitchen where they fed 200 residents every day. And I know that the budget is always tight. And then say, okay, here's a budget, and we're cutting it by 10%. And you've got to offer three different entrees. And so, sadly, a lot of meals probably are just heated up and whatnot. And yet he said, but I prepare things. She goes, no, you don't. You just heat them up. And she goes, besides, the residents don't care what the food tastes like anyway. And he says, they do. They really do. But she was just so afraid that she was not going to let anybody call him a chef and a cook. And I just thought, I'm sorry, but how stupid. Because they're going to go home, and they're going to have a tender evening. Honey, thank you. We had such a wonderful evening. Can I rub your feet? Can I give you a back rub before we go to bed? He's going to feel distant, and he's going to be quiet. So she's going to say, see how boring a guy I married. And I just thought, it serves no purpose to express disdain or disrespect or contempt. It's never in the history of the world produced a more intimate, more fulfilling, and happier marriage. So have contempt for contempt. Aim for cherishing, and cherish is a strategy we can use to bring our spouse to their glory.
Hey, Gary, we are coming in for a landing here on day one. I want to speak specifically to that couple, and I don't know if it's the husband or the wife. And again, they've been married maybe 20, 30 years, and this is the rut that they have been following now. They haven't done the cherishing. How would you give them hope as we sign off today? What do you say to them about changing it tonight rather than going after each other verbally? What can they do differently?
Here's where I think cherishing can point to an entirely different marriage and why this mindset thing matters. I was in Winnipeg in February. I wouldn't recommend that to anyone.
Yeah.
You don't know cold.
I think July is when
you Winnipeg in February. Met a delightful man named Terry who had two different marriages. Both wives died of a terrible disease. And he had heard me talk on marriage, and he just said, Gary, what you say is so true, but I want to share my story with you. He had been married to his first wife for, I think, 17 years, and she'd been fighting cancer for 5 years, and the last 7 months, around-the-clock care. Just had to do everything. And when your wife gets that sick, that's all you can do. She died, and he was single for 4 years, and then married his second wife, who would later die of cancer. But he said his second marriage was so much richer and happier than his first marriage, not because his second wife was more excellent than his first wife. Huh. He said, I knew them both well because he'd been married to both of them for almost 2 decades. He goes, my attitude was completely different.
So it was a bit more about him than
yeah,
them.
I treated them like you're talking about. I treated my wife like royalty. I treated my second wife like royalty. I called her princess. I treated her like one. I served her. He goes, I got used to doing that with my first wife when she went through cancer and I had to do everything. And I had to do everything as a single man. So I just kept doing that for my second wife, and she was so grateful and she was so happy, and she thought she had already got a taste of heaven. I didn't know that husbands acted like this, but he didn't realize I didn't act like that in my first marriage. But what really hit me and what I really stress is that he was adamant, it's not that my second wife was more excellent than my first. That's not why we had a happier marriage. It's that my attitude was so different. I cherished my second wife and had a much happier marriage. And so I'm saying, regardless of what your spouse does, if you cherish your spouse, I believe you're going to have a happier marriage.
Yeah. Gary, this has been so encouraging, and I know you have offered a lot of hope and even motivation to couples who say, how can we do this better? So thank you for that. We have a lot more to cover in your book, Cherish, the one word that changes everything for your marriage. And I want to invite you back next time so we can dig a little deeper and find out more of the great truth that you have found in this idea of not only loving your spouse, but cherishing them. Can we do it?
I'm eager to do that. Thank you.
And thank you, Gary, for your energy and your insights and the way you've helped us understand how cherishing can strengthen that relationship and some of those common mistakes that couples make in the marriage. On behalf of Jim Daly and our entire team, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller.
Today's discussion really highlighted the need for us to be the change in our relationships instead of hoping and praying that our spouse will change. I love that story that Gary Thomas told at the end of today's program about the man who had a more fulfilled and happy marriage to his second wife because he had a different attitude toward her. He cherished her. In his book, Cherished, Gary shows what husbands and wives can begin doing today to turn their marriages around, even a marriage marred by neglect and disrespect. To order your copy of Cherished, give us a call on 031-716-3300 or visit our website at safamily.co.za. And while you're on our website, have a look at our online marriage assessment, which is a quick and easy tool to help you figure out some strengths and weaknesses in your marriage. And then it directs you to tools to help you improve in those areas relevant to you, so that you can do a better job of cherishing your spouse. It's free, it takes about 10 minutes to complete. So please look out for that on our website. And also look out for the United We Pray for Schools campaign. We're part of a collaborative that are encouraging everyone to pray for schools in the month of May. And there are some resources on our website to help you do that. Also, just a heads up that Mother's Day is coming up on Sunday. We have some really exciting Mother's Day specials online and in store. So please check out our website to find something perfect for Mom. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Graham Schnell, inviting you to join us tomorrow for the conclusion of our program with Gary Thomas. And we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.